And welcome to In-Game Chat for Thursday, April 22nd, 2010, the Relevant episode. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm RJ.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Dennis.
And tonight on the show we talked to, well, actually, we started off with tweets and emails, and that's pretty much how the show came about. New Halo Reach vid doc that we were watching, also iPhone news. We did talk about Roger Ebert and his opinion on video games as art. Infinity Ward talk was had, also Sony's advertising, their marketing department, their strategy, and how they go about doing that now. Gamer score affecting players, XCOM came up in the conversation, Splinter Cell Conviction was talked about, and probably will be again next week. $25
Sparkle Horse.
Sparkle Horse.
Star Ponies. Brilliant.
And music inspiring in games, also voicemails, Doctor Who. Are we leaving the food talk in?
No.
No food talk. But anyway, that's what we talked about. If you'd like to send us tweets or emails, send us tweets at In-Game Chat. You can send us emails, everyone at InGameChat.net.
They can even be about food.
And they can be about food. And also you can call us at 201-7-IN-GAME. There you go. So enjoy the show. We'll see you next week. Multiple tweets, but you guys must discuss the new Halo Reach vids hotness, a Battlefield-esque mode. I'm down.
Oh, okay. Man, sorry.
It looks like Halo.
I don't know what I'm supposed to say about it before I say bad things about it. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad, but these guys are... They're awfully excited about something that I don't even think amounts to iterative gameplay. You know, I haven't played it yet. I don't know. But I know that looking at it, these guys are like, and I know that it's a vid doc and they're trying to play it up for their people. But, I mean, doesn't it kind of seem sometimes like you can live Halo? I mean, and I don't even mean obviously from the player base. That's been a joke for a long time, but these guys can live Halo like they can't live anything else. I mean, which maybe explains a lot about sub-iterative gameplay. Like, that the changes you see are so, I don't know. What is the absolute opposite of dramatic?
Like, status quo?
I suppose. I mean, you've got something that looks almost exactly like a battle rifle and seems to behave almost exactly like a battle rifle, and it does good damage, and you can't shoot it fast or else it's inaccurate, and this is worth, like, being really vociferous about, you know? It's like, yeah, okay.
It's a battle rifle.
I get it. I don't expect you to change the world, that's for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. You guys have something that obviously sells extremely well. But if you're not going to change the formula, then I know perfectly well that it's not going to do much for me because the previous efforts haven't done much for me. So, fan service, maybe that's what it is, I guess. There's something servicing an established and really kind of stalwart game plan. That's really great, but I think it keeps people where they are in relation to Halo. If you loved it, you'll love it. If you don't, I don't think you will. So, I mean, whatever. You know, I don't want to shell over him just because the dude practically wet himself talking about the pistol.
And the sniper rifle.
Did he talk about the sniper rifle?
Yeah, but it was like 5 seconds. Oh my God, sniper rifle.
I think I was listening to my beer. That's cool. I mean, I like it. You have to understand, of course, and I'm sure that if you listen to the show at all, ever, in the past many years, you could probably draw a line between everything I've said about Star Siege Tribes and what kind of happens down in the little tiny, tiny particle of me that's still very optimistic. Anytime somebody includes jetpacks.
Jetpacks, yeah.
So... I mean, I've, you know, seen them, people jetpacking around. I mean, it's clearly, you know, they're not going to go all they're not going to full on tribes or anything, but you know, there's some jetpacks, and I certainly miss jetpacks. And by the way, what the fuck, dude? Jetpacks aren't even fucking hard anymore. I suppose once upon a time they were a pretty difficult thing to deal with. Rendering game fields on like a you know, using the full third dimension to make all that stuff happen required that really perfect alchemy that Tribes was able to put together. And while every other first-person shooter was taking place in little tiny boxes, but it was 12 years ago. 11, a little more than 11 years ago. It was the end of 98, but fuck it, whatever. Can I see some more jetpacks, please? Really? Just a jetpack game that kicked ass. And even every other attempt at Tribes is... Tribes 2 was not, you know... I know a lot of people came to the series for the first time in 2, but it wasn't 1. And then what was it? Vengeance was the other one they released?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was, you know... It was kind of okay, but didn't really do it for me. More things need jetpacks. I suppose I should have probably sunk $25 into... What was the name of that fucking game? Steam Only? Huh?
No.
No, it was a motherfucker that was like DirectX 10 only.
Damn it, I know what you're talking about, too.
Was it Shattered Horizon?
Shattered Horizon.
That was it. I should have done that.
Yeah.
Not exactly... jetpacks, but whatever. You think a guy that bitches about not having enough jetpacks, we got to play a thing that was all about jetting around with your pack. Or whatever, I don't know. But I didn't.
Looking over at the other tweets that we got, Dead End responded after I post our voicemail number that we'd been getting a lot of butt dials and stuff. He said, "Oh, I guess he's getting a drunk Splinter Cell call later this week," which we never got, so thanks for delivering on that.
There's still some week left.
Yeah, there is. There's and a Friday of all days.
Yeah.
That we should be getting something like that. Iron Past writes, "I think I know the answer, but do any of you have jailbroken iPhones? I almost want to do mine just for a custom message tone."
I'm glad you mentioned that, because there was like a couple things actually. I know that's not exactly our wheelhouse, mm-hmm. but I did want to bring up the iPhone stuff.
Yeah.
We got a few requests to talk about.
If I had an iPhone, it would be jailbroken.
The only reason I would not, I don't
have a BlackBerry because work pays for it, you know. So
yeah, I don't particularly care enough. I don't want to do those things badly enough mm-hmm. to jailbreak my phone. I also know that that's like, I can revel in the completely unwarranted, I can bask rather in the unwarranted glow of perfect safety on my phone. And, right. and I can be a numb-minded idiot as long as I want if I don't jailbreak my phone. I don't mm-hmm. have to worry about security issues. So I can mouth breathe through the next 14 months of my 2-year contract and then buy whatever Android hotness happens to be working at the time. Or of course, I could wait a little while longer and just put that shit on my iPhone.
Right.
Which old boy managed to do in extraordinary alpha form. So
it's crazy. I didn't hear about that.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
No, it's from the one of the... what's his name? Slips my mind at the moment, but I was reading about it earlier today. One of the people who does those things.
Okay.
I apologize for not having that information at the tip of my brain, because I didn't think we'd be talking about it. But yeah. Has managed to put to port Android over to the iPhone.
It's crazy.
On a jailbroken and under duress.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But it's mostly. The indication is it's a hell of a lot better than you would have expected.
Okay.
So, I don't know. None of us do. I mean, Jeremy and I have talked about this before, long before I got one.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you would jailbreak it, but I will not. I don't think.
I never will either. I'll never go down that. I'm kind of like with him. There's really not anything there.
You're on a first gen phone.
I'm on a first gen.
Silverback. Yeah, but kind of. See, much like you know how when your processor and your video card start to get kind of old in your system,
mm-hmm.
that's when you should just overclock the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Because you know you're going to replace them in the next few months anyway. So just push the motherfuckers past any rational barrier because you're going to replace it. You know, one of these days you're going to have to crawl out from inside your first gen iPhone.
That day may be.
Because of that fourth gen.
Next month.
That motherfucker is rude looking. I really like it. Like, it looks like they finally hit on the right balance of sleek and industrial that they've kind of been trying to figure out for a while.
Yep.
I mean, whatever. We're still kind of up in the clouds about OS 4.0, I think. But it just as far as the handset design.
Yeah. Totally.
It's very clean.
I was
very,
like,
very nice.
Hey. I think this is my chance. I think this is when I, you know, get on the other.
That'd probably be a good opportunity for you. And break that old silverback.
See what
shit
I can do with this thing. Yeah. Follower 00 asks, any reason why the site is down? This is some of you guys experienced this, and if you've ever gone to the forums, we kind of explain it there because that's where it happens. But we never really go into depth on it on Twitter and most of the time in the show itself.
Yeah.
But most of the time, when the site's down, we just haven't paid our host.
And it's not because, like, we're lazy or anything. It's
our host
is an unbelievable dinosaur of a thing that operates on the internet, and not just operates on the internet, but whose entire existence is based around internet datas. And the thing is like a fucking stegosaurus.
It is.
It's such a small-brained and stupid thing.
I can't even enter my credit card info to their site.
No, you can't. You can't pay online.
They think you can, but it doesn't work.
No, you can't do stuff. Like, you can't have it automatically recur. Like, you can't have payments automatically recur. And because, like, none of us, you know, because we like kind of like to share the burden of the cost, it's never, like, it's either me or Scott or something like that paying with our cards, but it's just, it's this unbelievable hassle. You have to actually call a person on a fucking telephone. I have to use a telephone and call a guy and read numbers to him. It's ridiculous. Like, it's fuck.
Risky too.
Who even fucking does that shit? And not to mention the fact that, well, why don't you just get out from under him and go to this other thing? Because you have to actually, dude, they have to fucking send you parchment. And you have to scrawl on the parchment with some words and things and send it back to them. And go through this whole process. It's so awful. They're such horrible.
That's 95% of the reason that sometimes you'll see the site down. This was not that reason, though, but Jeremy can probably explain it.
Whatever. They changed their IP.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That's what happened. That's why the site was down.
I think it was a little weirder than that because it wasn't as simple as the, you know, DNS change and having that change propagate through everything. Jeremy didn't have too much trouble with it, but I had trouble with it after that for like days. So, trying to FTP our file to where it needed to go, and I could access the, you know, our WordPress stuff, but I couldn't access our front page, things like that. But whatever. That time it was weird. Wasn't money that time.
No, it wasn't. Anyway, we apologize for the delay, and glad you're still sticking around with us. BK Smith says, welcome back, guys. Seam down. Cheer up. Better games are coming, I hope.
Well, you know, to clarify, I think part of the problem was, I don't think anybody's suffering from clinical depression, but it was kind of the gaming equivalent of clinical depression, where we could perfectly well recognize it. It's fine. Like, you know, yes, the sky is sunny and everything's good and I have a nice job and it's all okay, but somehow I'm still in a funk. It's like that. There are lots of games. They're all over the place. They're all of, you know, they're all above average, which is as a statement doesn't make any sense, but, you know, they're all great or they seem like they're great and they're perfectly good, fun to play, but I'm just not enjoying them. So it's something... It's something outside of all of that. And I think, like we said on the show, it's us as well. But true that there are better or yet still very good games coming out.
And at the time we had posted that episode, you know, we were hoping for one of them, and I think we got it. But we'll talk about
most
that
part,
later.
Yeah. You closed that shit out? You didn't, did you? You didn't play it anymore?
No.
Huh.
No.
He's somebody I talked to about that.
You'll have it.
You know, when that gets
you'll
back.
You'll have it next show. BK Smith goes on to say, sad start, great ending. Battlefield Bad Company 2, much better with friends who understand the rules and roles of multiplayer. Welcome back. So, thanks. Great to be back. Spartacus 21 says, I'm curious about your thoughts on Roger Ebert's comments about video games never being considered as art.
Okay. Sure. You know, I remember very clearly, like, 3 years ago, when this was a much... When if you weren't talking about it, you weren't talking about games. Like, everybody needed to be talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think you have to talk about it.
Yeah.
The question is there, and they're for a good reason. I think the problem was there's no good answer. Like, movies are less... I mean, movies, whatever. You call them art, whatever. They have dimensions that books don't have. Books have dimensions that paintings don't have. You know, like, games have dimensions that movies don't have. I think it's complicated, and I think it's all hairy and weird, you know? And it's mostly shit. Some of it, like, clearly is art. But... who the hell even knows? Like, I don't know how to figure it out. And I think it's really who wants to? When we get down to it, right? When you get just tired enough of the conversation, I think you realize, yeah, whatever, it's fucking great and it's fun and I know how it makes me feel and that's all that matters. And there's lots of other dudes who know how it makes me feel because they feel the same way. What I think about Ebert is, first off, yeah, motherfucker, I heard you last time.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. You don't think this. He can't even do that.
Yeah. What is it?
And he's obviously fine-tuned his thing a little bit more. The only part of it that caught me at all was there was something in his elaborate claim that said it was tied deeply to the fact that you're playing and acting and interacting, and that if it ever did anything artistic, it basically ceases to be a game. And I was like, well, whatever, dude. Way to create a back door to your own fucking logic. What he was basically doing was judging the future tense of the argument. And that's just, you can't go anywhere from there. You've just decided. And that's fine. He's really well read. He's very, very smart. He knows a lot about what he knows. But so much that he can't see what he doesn't know about all this other stuff. So it's just, I don't know whether somebody went and needled him, asking him to elaborate, or whether he just was like, let me try this new machine that uses my old voice from when I had a face, or whatever. Like, that he was on Uber. I don't know. Probably somebody asked him about it again.
Yeah.
And that's cool, and he gave his opinion. But I just don't... He's just the wrongest guy to care about.
That's exactly the way I felt. It was like
basically
just all this talk, and I was like, what the fuck does it matter what this man says about this?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, got into a heated discussion.
Well,
you know.
All right, because I just can't help being wordy. I really can't. You ask a rhetorical question. What does it matter what he thinks? Do you think there's anybody in the world that values his opinion?
Do you think there's a significant
portion of the population that values his opinion?
Yeah.
Now, if you were to create a Venn diagram of here's the people who value his opinion, here's the people who don't know fuck all about video games, my guess is that there would be an enormous amount of overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what they do is, oh, well, I don't have to inform myself now. He has helped me reinforce mm-hmm. my preconceived notions about what this thing is. I can go back to not thinking critically or examining things for myself. It's yet another way that he's a proxy for...
Yeah.
He tells me games can't be
art. They take their word as face value. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's their...
I mean, it's not that extreme.
His opinion becomes their opinion.
Yeah, and I don't mean it to be that extreme. I'm saying the man has a huge audience for a very good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a very bad opinion. And that obviously will translate to his very big audience.
Which is what I learned after going through that argument. Because that was my major first question. Was like, oh God, Jesus, he's not in the fucking industry. It doesn't matter. Just fuck it. What is he? This is what he does with films. What does it matter what he says about
video games? You know what I think part of it may be?
And then it was...
The game industry and gamers are also, you know, guilty of this, but they have shown a lot of times they aspire to be the movie industry.
Which was a huge mistake, I think.
Right. And I think because we don't have a you know, Roger Ebert of the video game industry, like there's a lot of gamers who, you know, kind of look over to him and be like, well, he's the movie guy, so
we've spent 10 years wanting to be like movies.
Right. And so when he, you know, kind of poo-poos our thing, we're like, well,
it hurts a little bit.
Yeah.
It stings. You'd be a liar if you said it didn't sting just a little bit. So, yeah, I guess actually there are a lot of dimensions to the argument. I think more, I just don't want it to matter. But another dimension is maybe indirectly related. And I'll go ahead and be inclusive here. We're also fucking insecure.
Mm-hmm.
I think people in what passes for the gaming media are fucking terrified of becoming legitimate. They're terrified of acting legitimate. I think I could probably gather a whole lot of ire about what I'm about to say, but like most sites, like, go read Joystick. Mm-hmm. Try to get some information out of a Joystick post. It's sandwiched in between more pop culture references than have any business being there. The whole thing is turned into some pun or some amazing joke. It's like you're not allowed to post your fucking news story until you've come up with some horrifying pun or reference.
Or
and then
or
absolutely you have to make sure that in the body of your post you reference your awful, bullshit, stupid pun or reference. It's self-effacing to the point of being gross.
I've learned to either filter that when I read Joystick.
Yeah, well,
or
they do throughput really well. Their throughput is good.
Or I pick it up from whoever else has the relay that I'll read there.
The thing I think a lot of people will hate is when I say that, I mean, we know that there really is no gaming media, no gaming journalism, I'm sorry. It's very, what little of it there is, I find a lot of it at Kotaku. I don't like 3/4 of what they post, the content of what they post, mm-hmm. but they've got some dudes who do some decent work. They're spread out around the world in such a way that they've always got some editorial motherfucker that can cover shit relatively local, at least in terms of time zones. I actually am a huge fan of Stephen Totila just because I think the motherfucker's got chops like nobody else has. He's the closest thing we have to a Dan Rather or something, you know, to someone who actually has a journalistic take on this bloggishness that passes as real information. His signal to noise ratio is extremely high compared to just about everybody else who does this kind of crap. And he doesn't show his ass outside of his job. You know, he is on national media a lot as a very calm, very organized and very kind of a dogged arbiter for these things, where he's always trying to dispel the cobwebs from inside the heads of some, you know, tanorexic boob job sitting at the anchor desk. I mean, I've seen it a number of times, and I do have a lot of respect for that. The rest of it is just fucking fart jokes with, like, kind of with the press release woven in there. Well, it's not good. It's not helpful for anybody. It really isn't. I'm not saying you can't do that. It would be retarded for me to say that. It would be idiotic for me to suggest that we get a page in a high circulation daily newspaper or something. I'm just saying that there's no self-respect or very little self-respect. And so a lot of times people just expect a flashpoint of recognition to occur from outside of our own thing. Oh, hey, look at this amazing thing you people are all a part of. Well, change comes from within. You know, if you want people to see you differently, then you need to act differently. And as a whole, we don't act very well. So I think it's insecurity. And I think it's an old man who sees our insecurity, who's judging the participants as much as he's judging, you know, he's judging us as much as he's judging games. That's a guess of mine, but
I can see that.
So yeah, sorry. I know, you know, whatever. I know a lot of other people would have been like, fuck that old man. And that's actually a really good answer.
But yeah.
I can't stop there. I do think it's still an excellent question. I just hate that it's still an excellent question.
It's still there. Iron Pass goes on to say, I just wanted to say I don't necessarily consider games or movies art, but do think one can be just as artistic as the other. But that's gotten more attention than it should, and I'm sure you all have different interpretations.
We do. Assuming not everybody. Again, I think we're all kind of the same mind on this particular thing.
We've had this discussion before.
A lot among each other off the show. So.
I remember one episode back when we were on the, you know, FCC airwaves.
Yeah, when we were live.
Yeah, when we were live as well.
It was one of our early ones.
Yeah, that we had a discussion on this as well. Iron Pass tweets again. Damn it, this looks cool, but Halo 3 Limited Edition ruined that price for me. I'll wait for it to come down. He posted a pic. The pic is of the Legendary or whatever the massive fucking edition of Halo Reach.
Well, it's better. Is. You know why?
For a cat helmet?
No.
No, that's one of the reasons why.
It's got a bunch of mans hanging out.
It gives me figures.
And it's this one, and it's the mans with the sniper rifle. And the blue mans. I told you, if you include in your collection thing.
Look, that one's got a sniper there. And he's kneeling down. That's, yeah. And the guy's holding a shotgun.
It's a little, I don't know if that's supposed to be a tableau or something, but that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's moderate warmth. No, I won't call it hot, but.
Well, it's better than the helmet from before. It's what came with ODST? Was there anything big? Do they do anything big with ODST? I can't remember.
I don't remember anything big. No.
I don't
know.
I'm surprised.
I really don't.
Well, Xerneas was originally an expansion for Halo.
That's 3. True.
Yeah. Well, yeah. they were confused for that entire year about what that product actually was. Which, by the way, I really liked that.
It was good.
I mean, you want to make tiny iterative design changes to your game and have me enjoy it. That's how to do it. So, I don't know. Which makes me feel like I should say that the opening poo-poo was really just sort of directed at the multiplayer.
Yeah.
I fully expect them to do something quite clever in the single player.
Yeah, that was the multiplayer we were talking about.
Nobody gives a shit about the single player. They can fuck around there all they want to.
Yeah. And I really want to see what they do. Smelton says, definitely talk about the leak of the new iPhone, also about the new Battlefield Bad Company 2 patch, and Infinity Ward sinking fast.
Oh. Yeah.
Kind of covered the new iPhone earlier.
Kind of, even though, well, see, I feel like it's kind of stupid to talk about the leak itself, just because that whole cycle.
Right.
It rolled over, and since we've done a show, it's done its entire thing.
Yeah.
Although, that's the new iPhone, talk about that, but then the whole thing.
Leaking the dude's name?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
anus, man. Like, you have got to be a real pecker-headed son of a bitch to go that far. That's just a little too much.
I've seen some people suggest it might have been a marketing ploy by Apple.
Yeah, here's the thing. I will admit to raising an eyebrow over that, because in my opinion it would have been a thing. However, the retort by one of the Gizmodo guys actually makes a lot of sense. It would have been a very bold move for something like the first iPhone. Yeah. If Apple even did this thing, and actually he's right that it would have, if it was an intentional leak or a guerrilla leak, it would have been a complete break from everything Apple has ever done with their marketing. It would have destroyed. He acted like you were stupid if you thought that. Turns out you were really only stupid if you thought that, and you were part of the PR access journalism machine. Since none of us are, it's kind of difficult to see how that works. And it's a really delicate dance that goes back a very long time. And it maybe would have made sense for it would have been a really good gambit in a different time. But for the fourth iteration of an iPhone, like it's not going to sell like fucking dollar tacos. Of course it is. And it doesn't matter. They don't need a leak. You know? You know, they're going to blow a little bit of OS 4.0 up your ass when they whiff the iPad. I mean, the fucking iPad, dude. It's a piece of shit. It's a piece of shit with a ruined fucking network stack.
Yeah.
It's getting it banned from large organizations. Yeah. Like, fuck that. So you know, they shine you on with some stuff about, you know, faux multitasking. And then what? Another month from now, they would have released the specs and some initial pictures of it. It would have done them no good. It was too big a gambit. Although, it sure fucking sounded great, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? If ever there was a piece of self-serving industrial espionage, like, it's brilliant. It's almost a shame that they didn't do it. It's so perfect. So, I don't know. What was the other thing?
Battlefield Bad Company 2 patch.
I've done far more playing on the console than I have on the PC, so I don't have a huge investment. When is that? Oh, God, I'm going to be a totally bad person and claim that I don't even know if that's going live yet. I know that there was weapon balancing involved, but they don't like to talk about that shit. They actually like to dump that shit on you undiscussed, so that there's no preconceived notions.
And there's really only two of us playing that. That's you and Matt, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Kevin Dunn. Yes.
You know, as a sort of third-party our man in Columbus.
Yeah, speaking of, we got to check his voicemail. He left us a voicemail.
Hey, Kevin, you know, I know you're listening. Do you think you don't know what's in that voicemail? He does that every now and then when he tries to call and gets pissed off for like three or four calls in a row, and I don't call him back. He always calls me at like 2:30 in the afternoon, though. And it's like, what do you think I'm doing, man?
Yeah. And then Infinity Ward sinking fast, which we kind of covered.
A little, no. We covered it.
We more covered
the two guys.
West and
Zimpella.
Moving on.
I don't know, man. I really wish I could. I really wish I knew what to think, but it's real messy.
Yeah.
And so much of it is, I mean, we see the guys leaving. We see a lot of the public shaming and a lot of the public grumbling, and they create their new studio. But there's so much of it that isn't happening publicly, and there's so much of it that didn't happen anywhere but under, you know, behind closed doors. So I think where you're at on this whole thing is determined by, I mean, I don't know, you know, if you really, really like Call of Duty, then you're totally on the West Zimpella team, I guess. Yeah.
They've hired just recently, they've hired five people who have left Infinity Ward already.
Yeah, well, that's hardly...
The lead designer at Infinity Ward is now the lead designer at Respawn.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was another one that I was looking at here, but I can't remember. It, like, something about... they were giving out the... Activision was giving the bonuses of those two guys.
I thought it was, it's the royalty payments.
Or maybe it was, maybe that
due
was it.
Due to the people who participated in its production.
There it is.
But it can't be given out. It's basically being divided among the Infinity Ward.
Right.
Based on certain percentages. And every time somebody leaves Infinity Ward, because those royalty payments can't be made yet, the share increases for the remaining members. It can't be made yet because the royalties are part of the litigation.
Yeah, these bonuses are being redistributed to everybody else, to the people who did not allegedly attempt to steal company secrets.
Yeah, which actually was the first time I'd heard it worded that way.
Activision is not pocketing that bonus money. It's still going to the people who work at Infinity Ward, but you have to work at Infinity Ward to get it.
Yeah,
I don't want to see talented people screwed out of a paycheck anymore.
I tell you what, this will come to a conclusion long after anybody stopped giving a shit.
Yeah.
I will reiterate that I'm not particularly fond of either one, you know?
I know.
If you've listened
to this show, I think you would know
I just
that.
Don't like them as guys, so it's hard for me to develop a lot of sympathy for them. I know that what they've done isn't really that extraordinary. I mean, they did some really, they put together some really good stuff, but I don't know. I'm not happy about it. That's the thing. It's not like a dogfight or something. It's bad. Even though it's between two parties I don't like, it's bad for everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of shit's being slung. Mm-hmm. It's possible for that shit to get on lots of other people.
You know, and I'm sure they're... Yeah, what's going to come out of this?
You know, I don't hate everybody in Infinity Ward. I hate the guys who were, you know, running their yaps. And, you know, just in a way that wasn't consistent with the kind of thing I'd like to hear.
The interesting part of it, for me, personally, is that, you know what, I don't care what you're going to do at Respawn, and I don't care what you're going to do over at Infinity Ward. What's Treyarch doing?
Yeah, I mean, they're still toiling away.
Yeah, I'm more interested to see what they come out with.
And
next,
yet again, I had a lot of fun with World at War.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
In all fairness, it really did feel like they were kind of modulating and playing with a lot of the changes that Infinity Ward invented.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they going to be capable of doing now that those guys aren't really working that way? I don't know. It's really confusing. I can tell you I don't have. I don't have anything in that fight, so I think it's kind of bad for everybody.
Mm. Calgar 99 says, my Halo hype meter was very low until this came out. Here we go again. He posted a link to the vid doc that we were watching just a few minutes ago.
I've read a lot of the media coverage, like written coverage,
and we've only watched.
Yeah, we haven't watched it.
3 minutes of an 8-minute vid doc. So
it's just vid docs are heavily produced.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's about multiplayer. So really all I care about is the opinions of the participants.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to say yet again,
when the participants aren't the developers.
Yes. and reading how Bungie handled the media and basically just took a very hands-off approach and let them play the game and didn't fuck with them. Didn't stand over their shoulder and tell them what they could and could not do, or should and shouldn't do, and just let them play. Let the moments kind of evolve by themselves. That's good. That's a really good thing for everybody. And the fact that those guys could do that and then come away with it extremely excited bodes very, very well. I guess it's just the vid doc, which is a sales pitch. So I'm like, okay.
Are you gonna get in on that? Are you gonna get in on the beta?
I don't know. I am actually not very excited about it. I don't have any problems with it. I don't know.
I'm not. I'm excited about it to play it, but I'm more excited that I think that it's been ever how many months it's been since ODST released, and for me, ODST alone just kind of like it almost mirrors what Crackdown did. Crackdown had the Halo 3 multiplayer beta packaged into it, but Crackdown was worth buying on its own.
Yeah.
It was worth buying and playing.
Yeah.
Almost works the same way this time. ODST has this multiplayer beta for
ODST
Reach.
ODST was great.
But yeah. ODST is worth buying on its own.
It was a lot of fun.
And it's been enough time now that you can probably pick that up.
Yeah, probably find it pretty cheap.
They're pretty, pretty decent price. Get it and still enjoy it for what it was, and also have this little thing on the side to mess with for a few weeks while it's out. So, Spigot wants us to please discuss the awesomeness of Kevin Butler and why it took so long for Sony to find him. I don't know.
You don't know what? Why it took so long?
I guess it took them making ads that were creepy and weird for so very long that just most of the time made no sense whatsoever.
Well, they made an effort to stop. They have stopped trying to give us a Japanese sales pitch.
Yeah, yeah, that's the best way to put that.
They took the time to figure out what an American sales pitch.
Yeah,
is.
Totally. That's a good way.
To find the people who could do it, and that's where it came in. And you know, if you recall, think back a little bit. I know you didn't have one, but during the PS1 era, fuckers put together like they had a great ad campaign.
Well, with Crash.
But I mean, just in general, they ran a very good, very anglicized, appropriate, localized kind of ad thing. SCEA, like, really had a hold on how people wanted to look at the system, and it was before they went too far down the hole of the dark, extreme hole. They were just being kind of witty and guerrilla and funny, you know, and. got away from that when their popularity grew to, you know, unprecedented proportions. And I think maybe they were just forced back into looking at things like that again. They were forced into kind of underdog advertising to some extent. Even though the whole, you know, Kevin Butler stuff was clean. Their new ad campaign is, it's clean.
Yeah.
And I like it. That doesn't quite make up for how many, many times they put their foot in their mouth. And how very, very unfriendly their persona has been. But it's good stuff. It's funny. Like, I appreciate the wit when you're trying to sell me some stuff. I already bought your shit. That's cool. You know?
Everything they advertised for, I've pretty much already bought whatever it was they were advertising. Ger Snort says, James seems a little sour grapes on the maps. I'm kind of all right with them, but yeah, none are memorable. Bring back Oasis.
Oh, we're talking about Bad Company 2.
Bad Company 2 maps.
I don't, you know...
Which he goes on to say, by the way, that was Bad Company 2.
I don't know if sour grapes is the right thing. I mean, I take them for what they are. I honestly can't help but compare them to the first one. And I just... the flow was a whole lot better there for me. And a few people have agreed with that sentiment. Maybe we're just kind of caught in... And this is totally possible, and it does happen, but maybe we were caught, like... I don't know. I really loved what you did before. I was really having kind of a lot of fun with it.
I don't know if there's an email or if that was in somebody posted on the thread that somebody had gone back...
I think it was a thread thing.
Was it a thread thing? They had gone back to Battlefield 1, and it was like, wow, it's
been still tons and tons
really
of people.
Populated. Yeah,
he made a comment that was that I hadn't said, but I've gotten stuck in squads in 2. I was just like, this is horrible. This group is horrible. This whole thing is horrible. I need to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would leave, come back, and be exactly where I was after joining random game again. And I was like, man, that is. An unpleasant experience. And I don't know how the matchmaking works. It's so
opaque. It may not if that's happened.
Yeah. I mean, but it's so opaque, you know. Mm-hmm. It may prefer something that I was already in for some ridiculous reason. I don't know. I'm not trying to say that's how it was. But I would not be surprised if... One just worked so well for so long on the 360. It was always people playing it. It was always just cruising right along with a really, really good player base. You could always find people doing stuff. It worked. It was really, really good. I wouldn't be surprised if 2 burns out faster on the console, significantly faster. But conversely, has that same kind of Bad Company 1 long-term burn on the PC. Because these guys don't have anything to compare it to. If you look at a lot of the PC only or very PC centric crowds out there, they're like it's head over heels in love with Bad Company 2, and they don't really as an entity have anything to compare it to. You know, the Rock Paper Shotgun guys, like their community people are fucking PC people. You know, Ars Technica is the same way, and that's 2 very respectable and very intelligent. Or intelligently led groups of people who are PC only and who love that damn game. So that'll be interesting. I think that's going to get the better of me too. I think that's probably going to wind up playing it in the long term.
Over to the emails. Clint Davis wrote into us just after we recorded our show last Monday. Says, hey, Endgame Chat, great show on dissecting Heavy Rain. I agree with the points you guys raised on the story. It completely ruined the replayability factor. Here comes a spoiler. While Scott as the killer was cool, spoiler over, I think a better option would have been to introduce a different character and cloud his or her identity. Let the player create the challenges for Ethan and such. That way it would be a surprise to players when the killer is revealed. Based on choices made throughout the game, the killer would change. Obviously, that would be way too complex, but I like the idea. I like the idea of Heavy Rain, and I hope we see another game like it, with the exception of a better story and localization. What do you think? Sorry, James, last time you'll have to talk Heavy Rain, I swear. I like your idea.
Yeah,
I do too. I agree that it would be way too complex.
I think you're in the same place we are, man. Like, you finish Heavy Rain, you've spent a lot of time already hating Heavy Rain, and then you realize there's a lot of shit going on in Heavy Rain that nobody's ever bothered even trying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, too lazy, too scared to try. Mm-hmm. Or you know, these guys, I don't know, didn't know they shouldn't try some shit, didn't know it was impossible to pull the shit off. I'd love to see somebody come along and pick that kind of thing up.
Yeah. Just take
hell, even them.
They very well may take the plus points that they're seeing about this and just, you know, tweak, refine, and make better the next time. Who knows? I had another question for you. I love Battlefield Bad Company 2. My only problem with it is I feel you can't specialize your loadout completely. I like the class system, but I'd like to be able to carry an assault rifle and sub out the grenade launcher for C4. That way, the assault class could deal with tanks and such. What do you guys think?
I agree. There's a reason why they did what they did. They were trying to... This is going to sound like a bad criticism. I don't really think it is. They were trying to very carefully... Not force. They were really trying to incentivize people to not specialize so much. That could not be clearer than when you give the fucking sniper the C4. Like, two major components of his class diametrically opposed. Like, one is very, very, very much about destroying environments, structures, usually like buildings and where he will be, or the crates themselves, not the crates, but whatever, the fucking crates. That's what they were in the first game, and I'm too old to learn new things. So the crates... which is all about getting up close and being very personal in your combat. And then he's got the sniper rifle, which is about hiding really far mm-hmm. away and not moving. Like, I know what they were trying to do. And I trust that they tested this internally. I don't know if that cuts the mustard or not, but I got to believe that this wasn't a purely intellectual decision. Where somebody just sat down and said, you know what, I have this opinion about Bad Company, and I believe we should just sort of, you know, make an intellectual change to how all of this stuff works. Just snipers get the C4, like, because we want to mix it up a little bit. I have to believe they play balanced everything, and they liked what shook out. But I think if you've played out there with just, like, you know, with, like, Bob, the guy... Then you know that the sniper guy isn't doing what he's supposed to do with the C4. He's not. He's being a sniper. And that's all he's doing. He's sitting off in the bushes somewhere, sniping. And I know that I would love nothing more than to do exactly what I did in Bad Company 1, which is run around with my sub and have some C4
mm-hmm.
and, like, you know, have a silenced weapon and be sneaky and run around and drop C4 onto things. I thought that was really great, so... I agree.
Last question, swear to God. What do you guys think of the former head boys at Infinity Ward starting their own studio and signing the exclusive deal with EA? Again, you wrote this before hearing the last episode. Think we're going to see anything special from them or another Modern Warfare game? What do you think we will see from them?
Another Modern Warfare game. Bingo. Not named Modern Warfare.
Not named Modern Warfare at all.
But
no.
they did Medal of Honor, and then they went and did Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the last...
And I don't think they're going to change it up.
It's been the last 10 years of their life. Mm-hmm. It's what they know. I think it would be a mistake for them to try anything terribly difficult. I would not be surprised if they followed... I would not be surprised to see them make a... It's hardly a big deal, but if they made a third-person game instead of first-person game.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how they were fucking around with...
Well, it looked like they were trying.
Yeah, they were fucking around with the playlists.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
And I don't want to shit on them too much. Like, maybe this will be the opportunity for them to try something completely different. You know, a third person camera, or something. Try some sci-fi. But stock in military shooters is going to drop again. At some point, people just get tired of it. It becomes impossible to distinguish one from the next. And, like, I know I said this on the last show, but nobody fucking knows. We know. You guys who are listening know, because we're in it, but, like, compared to the grand scheme, not just of the world, but of people who play video games, we're nobody. All of us collectively, you guys who've listened to the show, the other hojillion give-a-shit gamers, like PAX-level gamers, who really care, all of us included, all of us give a shit motherfuckers, even compared to gamers, we don't amount to a hill of beans. So it doesn't matter. You know, Bob on the internet doesn't know who Infinity Ward is. He doesn't know the difference between Infinity Ward and Treyarch. He doesn't understand why you're supposed to hate Bobby Kotick. He doesn't know.
He knows one thing. It's called Modern Warfare.
Yeah, he doesn't even know. He doesn't even know the irony of Infinity Ward creating a new studio and going back to EA.
I wonder what the legality of doing some sort of like a movie or book tag like from the creators of, you know.
I don't know. Actually, that's a great question.
Call of Duty.
Because that happens on TV all the effing time.
That's the only way you get anybody to.
That should be the name of their next game, from the creators of Modern Warfare.
For anybody who's ever made
Modern Warfare really big on the box, and then from the creators being a little tiny thing. That's
should
be the name.
Yeah, for any dude who's ever produced a show and then been absolutely, you know, butt-reamed by Fox. That's all you've got going for you.
Everybody that's produced a show? Yes. Okay.
So, it's
certainly anybody that's ever produced a show on Fox. So.
It's the best thing they could possibly have going for them. But at the same time, like, that winds up being a lot of, that'll wind up being confusing, because the existing Infinity Ward can be the guys who brought you, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Modern Warfare, but then Treyarch's going to be the guys who brought you Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's very confusing. Nobody cares. Which is why, you know, it is kind of a big deal for them to abandon it. It's such a big fucking deal for them to abandon Modern Warfare. Like, I gotta imagine that name is worth a lot of money. Mm-hmm. A lot of recognition.
Well, this sounds familiar, doesn't it?
What do you mean?
Name changes.
Oh, yeah.
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 It was. We had the same thought.
Yeah, we did. Sorry, I was busy talking about things that had real value.
I know, exactly. And I'm in my own little world, usual.
It's fine. I get where you're at now. So it's a big deal, man. If anything, I just hope they take this opportunity to do something. I want them to try something different. They're clearly very talented people. I don't like their personal philosophy. I don't like the way they carry themselves. I don't like the cut of their jib, you know, but
as long as they put out good stuff.
But they make strong tech, you know, they really, really do. I'd just like to see them try something a little bit different. I'd like to think that there's some imagination there. But again, like, I know it's a little thing, but like, you name your company Respawn Entertainment, like,
that's not a good start.
No, it's just such a chuck against the whole conflict. Like, it's like you can't even conceive of a future
without this message.
Without being
tied to
that.
You don't know how to tell a story that isn't about you. You don't know how to live a life that isn't about your conflicts with other people. It's like a fucking rap video. And I don't want that. So, but whatever. I said that exact phrase last week, so fuck off. Move on before I repeat myself again.
Love the show. You guys really know how to talk games. Clint Davis. P.S. I predict Matt will talk about an old game like Monkey Island at some point during the episode this email is read. In game chat for the win.
He's on TDY.
Yeah, bad time to make a prediction, sorry.
He's probably out in California playing some old piece of shit.
Yeah, right.
If you're playing, we're talking about one right now.
I have a spectacular revelation about Matt for later on. Okay.
Why's it got to be for later on?
Because it's
probably ties
it's about Splinter Cell.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
No, he just got... I put
two and two together.
That was recognition.
Craig E. writes in and writes a very long email.
Which we read.
Luckily, he goes, in summary...
Oh, he put a TLDR.
Yeah, exactly. Splinter Cell Conviction succeeds when it combines stealth and action components, but never forces you into either corner. It allows you to work with the tools you've been given, adapt to the situations, and feel like a proper badass. Splinter Cell Conviction fails when it forces you into a corner of pure stealth or pure action, revealing all the missteps in a game that often feels like it's still moving with a 2006 project design. I'm interested in hearing James's thoughts on it. I'm mailing this on the 19th, when I actually just got the Billy Goat episode. Hopefully this gets to you at a time where Sam Fisher talk is relevant. Relevant.
Relevant?
Relevant.
What is that? How big is it? How does it eat? Only new things.
Only new things that are... thanks, Craig E. Good timing there, buddy, because we have played Splinter Cell more than others.
And I totally misunderstood his summary, because I was like, man, what you talking about? When he was saying, like...
Oh, you mean purely, all that up there?
Because it was purely good when it does this, and then... Because I didn't understand it was a conditional statement.
Yeah, it's a great email here.
And then he added in, like, all the fail state, and I had to absolutely agree, like... It's a good time as any, right?
Yeah.
How far have you gotten?
I'm still at the same place I told you. I'm on the Washington Monument. Yeah.
You are at the monument.
The very beginning when it's like, hey,
stay
in the dark. No, at the very beginning of the carnival.
So you haven't even gotten up to the monument.
No, I haven't gotten up to the monument.
Okay. You're not far enough. You're really not far enough. Matt has beaten it. I have beaten it. Scott is about halfway through. I hijacked it.
Really? Am I halfway through?
Maybe in terms of
doesn't feel like I played much enough to be halfway count. Through, but I've heard it short.
So. No. Well, there aren't many levels. I played unrealistic. Matt played on normal.
I'm on normal.
I don't know where to start. I played unrealistic because I was like, Splinter Cell was always about. Sam doesn't do well in a stand-up fight. If he gets shot, he's getting shot. Even on a lower difficulty, it didn't amount to much. The whole point of the game is to not get shot.
It's part of the reason why he doesn't really run fast.
So I just decided to play it on realistic. I am very interested to play it on normal now. Because I'm not sure what coefficients are changed between normal and realistic. Because I can take a few bullets... In realistic, actually, what seems to me like the same amount of bullets I could take back in a previous Splinter Cell on normal, instead of like one bullet putting me down for good, I can take a couple and that's fine. And I know it's a new mechanic now, but I'm wondering if the sphere of influence that your character has, if the detection range of the enemies and their tweakiness is somehow tied to the difficulty settings, I'm kind of believing that it is. Because there are a number of un-fucking-believably preposterous things going on in how the game works. All in all, having beaten it, I will say, super fun. Lots of fun. I liked it. It's fun to play. Real fun to play. Totally brutal. His motivations are really good. I like where that comes from. There are a couple of times in the game where you're subjected to a lot of the bullshit you found in previous games, where you can't kill anybody, you can't be seen by anybody, those kinds of things. Mostly you can sneak around and fucking murderize people all you want to, and that's, it's good. It's kind of what I want to do. He's fast. He's really limber. Like, you don't feel like you're constantly trying to goose him to get from point to point. You remember how you used to have, like, the old...
I felt more comfortable playing.
Yeah, he's quick, man. Mm-hmm. He feels like a lethal motherfucker in the way he moves around. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm okay with the... something I thought the previous games did. I'm going to throw out Double Agent. Double Agent was not good. But particularly Chaos Theory and Pandora Tomorrow. That shit actually had a perfect light balance for what you could see and not see.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you played the multiplayer.
Yeah, definitely.
Like the way that the... whatever the motherfuckers were called. Like... they really, really had a good balance with the lighting engine, and it was really nice. This one does something entirely different, and I'm going to be descriptive here because three, you guys haven't even played it. Instead of there being some sort of light indicator on your suit or a light indicator on the UI, which is what they've done in previous versions of the game, if you are hidden, if Sam is currently hidden, the entire scene will wash away to black and white. You may see enemy targets who are like kind of moving around a few feet in front of you or something in full color, but your whole scene will wash away to black and white. And then as you move into light, the scene will colorize. It's effective. It's useful. It prevents there from being any kind of UI element. And it prevents there being some sort of obtrusive, like, kind of bullshit device on Sam, which is what they did in Double Agent, which is just kind of ridiculous. I miss things like the wall climb, the wall split.
Oh, the wall split.
Stuff like that. I miss a lot of
that. I miss
that.
Hiding bodies, for the fuck's sake. Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
The problem is it doesn't... I was playing unrealistic.
I maybe missed that more so after playing the multiplayer with you.
Yeah.
I think I missed that aspect more so in playing multiplayer. Because in single player, I can still hide and take my time and do what I got to do. And then multiplayer is a little different.
But see, not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, some of the missions are okay. But this is the least, you have so few choices available to you in this game. You are simply going to go where they want you to go. You can either go in this door or that window. That's it. And I know, you know, but either way, you're still going to the same objective elevator, say. I don't feel like there's enough choice. I miss a lot of the cerebral gameplay from the previous Splinter Cells, where it was stalking. And I don't feel like there's any stalking in this game. I feel like it's the only reason you will ever encounter somebody in close quarters, the only reason you'll use a Krav Maga move is because it's absolutely necessary that you perform a close quarters takedown in order to unlock the other kind of thing.
Yeah, the execute.
You have deal. Played, RJ, have you?
I have not played.
You have not played any Splinter Cells?
No.
I've seen some of it in action this past weekend, and I was wondering what the black and white part was. Now,
yeah, it was the fact that you're hitting. They work off of a previous system that like the Rainbow Six games have used, where you can like look under a door and then mark targets. Vegas did this, where you can like put your guys like stack your guys at different doors, camera under the door, mark targets. Hit a button and then have your dudes blow through the door and take
down. Did you ever play any Rainbow Six?
No.
Not even that. Okay.
Very hard
well, you have then, so you know that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's probably already explained this
saying,
to you.
So.
Do what?
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what you can do now is you can mark targets based on what weapon you're using. Different weapons just have different stats. I went through the whole. I mean, like once I got the 5.7, which can mark four targets. I never, ever put that gun down the rest of the game because it can mark four targets. So I can mark, like, four guys, okay? The mark can just tell me where they are. Like, I can kind of just see the mark through a wall. But if I have performed a CQC takedown on somebody, snapped a guy's neck, killed him, then I've unlocked the mark and execute mode. What that means is that all the guys I've marked, I can basically wait for them to get in range and in line of sight, and then I can hit a button, and Sam will instantly just pow, 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 like do this quick bullet time type of automated execution of all the marked targets. Instant kill on all of them. It's a neat thing. A lot of the puzzles, because that's really what this is, it's, you know, the puzzle rooms. That's what it's designed around. That's a lot of fun, and it works really well when there's a setup for it. The problem is the setups are so obvious. It's very clear that, like, this guy's here for you to snap his neck so that you can then mark and execute these four guys or three guys or whatever. It's...
Yeah, I saw a situation like that. I don't know if you've maybe probably familiar with it. It was like, Sam was hanging from a ceiling, mm-hmm. I believe. And there was a guy walking always directly under him. Now, that's not a setup for a land on top of this guy.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what you do.
Yeah, that's exactly what
you do. You drop down, you go, rah, like a surprise kitty, because that's what he does. He drops down like surprise kitty.
And the other two guys in the room were marked, so it was splat, pow, pow, done.
Mm-hmm. And, like, let's say there's, you know, six shitheads in a room, right?
Mm-hmm.
I CQC one of the shitheads. Now I got five shitheads. I mark four of the shitheads, and then I like straight up just kill one of the shitheads and then execute the other four shitheads. Like the whole point of every encounter is that you deal with it that way. Mm-hmm. Except when it isn't. And I think that's where the game totally fucking fails. Totally fails. And I agree completely with that email. Anytime it puts you in a total stealth environment, you realize that you don't have any of the tools, any of the mechanisms that you had in previous hyper stealth centric splinter cells, where one very legitimate goal would be to go through the entire fucking level without ever touching a dude, you know? Or maybe you grab one guy and carry him off into the shadows, snap his neck and like put him down behind a barrel or something. Like, very methodical, very strategic. This game doesn't have that, because in the situations where it acts like you should play that way, you realize, oh, this is actually built more like an action game, and they've stripped away a lot of the stealth elements, a lot of the tools that you would use. A worse crime is the fact that, particularly on the last level, and I absolutely will tell you, this is when you're going to be happy you're playing on normal. In the entire last sequence, with the run-up to the final events, damn near every fight was designed as a stand-up combat fight, where it was a shooting match. It was the OK fucking Corral. And this game is not built for that. Sam is not built for that. The weapon mechanics are not built for that. And it was frustrating and maddening and just not fun for me. There was the occasional stealth kill, but really it was just not, it wasn't good. And all of that was kind of screwed by what I felt were some really, really dodgy AI mechanics. I didn't think they were horrible, but let's say you have like a handful of guys, right? And there's an outlier. There's the guy who, this is obviously my devil take the hindmost target. There's some dudes over here. And there's this guy kind of wandering over here. And I am absolutely in the inky fucking darkness, right? And I've got my silenced pistol. And the guy walks kind of near me, or, you know, he's out there or whatever. And, like, pss, I take one shot, clean as a fucking whistle, while nobody was even looking my direction. And I take him down. At least half the time, those other three motherfuckers knew exactly where I was. Oh, he's right over there. I've got eyes on target. They'd throw a grenade and they'd start shooting at my position. And then the little indicator that shows your last known position would pop up. And I'm like, well, I get that that's supposed to be a distraction sometimes and I can use it to flank them. Mm-hmm. But how are they going to know where I am? Like, it's just, it wasn't, this sounds whiny, but it wasn't fair. It didn't feel fair. It didn't feel like I was rewarded for being sneaky, waiting for the pathing, being silent and selective, and when I killed, it didn't. They just knew where I was. Like they could smell the gunpowder or something. It was, fuck it all. I didn't like that. I had a ton of fun with it. There were some really, really fun levels. The outro to the Lincoln Memorial I thought was fun, exceptionally cool, you know, very action movie. Final level I thought was asshole. But there were too many, and because of the way this game works, is there was a lot of, hey, defend this thing for 90 seconds.
God damn it.
Yeah, oh God.
I haven't gotten there yet.
Fuck. Fucking tons of that shit.
Damn it.
But anyway, that's how I felt about that. I will now take the opportunity to tell you that at best, at absolute best, that is half the game. Half. Probably more accurately a third of the game. And I'm not talking about in terms of bullet points. I don't want to indicate that the single player story, you know, that there's all this weird shit going on. I'm talking about in terms of the effort, the polish, and the construction of gameplay. The single player, if you know at least one other motherfucker with the same console you have, well, at this point, it's only the 360. It's not on the PC, and I'm sorry, you're not going to see it on the PS3. Mm. You know, one other guy that could get a hold of a copy from where the fuck ever, and a 360?
Play it with him.
You will make baby Jesus, cry if you do not play the co-op. Because it is some of the finest co-op I've ever played in my life. It is squared the fuck away. It's like, it's its own story, which is a prequel story to the single-player campaign. It doesn't cross over the same environments. It isn't a rehash of the existing shit. It gets its own cutscenes. It's got its own motherfucking intro. It's got all its own unique voice acting and storytelling and fucking A, everything. And it is solid as a motherfucker. Like, the net code is tight as hell. Like, even Scott, who's like, fucking voodoo curse to never be able to play anything properly over live. He and I had like one problem, like one thing, like one disconnect, then we hopped right back in. It was fucking great. Matt and I played for like 4 hours straight. This fucking game is so good that it actually prevented Matt from being an asshole. As many fucking crazy stories as I've told about him fucking over the people he plays with, we played like 4 solid hours of like squared away buddy cop type multiplayer, and it was goddamned great. I mean, it was fucking excellent. You can like all of the mechanics that exist in single player exist in the co-op, but they have the added dimension of each person being able to kind of utilize the other's abilities. Like, I can mark a bunch of assholes and you can mark a bunch of assholes, and then we can like essentially call an audible when you're ready to do an execute, and the other, I mean, if you're on headset, you can sort of call it out, but like if your partner does his execute, his mark and execute maneuver, it'll kind of like, time will slow down for a second, and the other guy, even if he doesn't have an assassination execute of his own queued up, he'll be prompted to join in on the dual execute. So the two of, so it's like fucking Boondock Saints, you know, all of a sudden, like it's really good, man. It's really, really, really good and really fun. Like, I had probably 10 times more fun playing the co-op. It's just, I can't think of a better thing that a couple of people could get together and play than Convictions co-op. It's just, it's absolutely on the money. And it's like, and it's not just like an hour or 2 hour storyline. Like,
it's really full.
It's probably, I don't know because I haven't gone all the way through yet, but I would say 3/4 of the evolution of the single player in terms of what it does, and infinitely more enjoyable. Because Conviction doesn't really clean up that well in either of the two respects of gameplay in the single player, either the full-on stealth or the full-on action. It always kind of exists somewhere in the middle, and it does some great shit. But the stuff that goes on in the co-op, like, you know, you can even like you can sort of like bullshit Army of Two your way through some of it, and like playing off the aggro of the guards.
We were bored. We were done. We were pretty much. We kept saying we were done. We're like, okay, we've gotten through.
Now we got to quit. We got to leave. We'll pick this up later. Let's just quit.
And so that's when we dick around.
Yeah.
But we kind of dick around and inch ourselves a little bit further. You know, into the thing, and it's like, well, let's just keep digging until we die, you know, and that just never happened.
It went on for a bit.
At that point, it's just like, let's go ahead and finish this.
But it was really cool because a mechanic I didn't mention for you guys is if an enemy sees you and then you hide, a little silhouette of your body appears in the last place those guys saw you.
So you know what
they... You know where they're going. They think you're there. And they'll all run around a corner and start shooting at that spot. Meanwhile, you can move around and flank them and do a lot of intentional sort of disruption of their thing. And with two people, you can do it very, very deliberately. Like just, you know, show the guy a little tit over here, and once he gets excited and runs off that way, you like start making your move and get over into this other darkness and cap him in the back of the head. Just fucking great, man. It's really, really good. There's not like a ton of like stupid buddy stuff where like the two of you have to, you know, you have to hoist this guy up over the thing. There's like a couple parts of that, a couple of reinforced doors that it takes both of you to blow through. Mm-hmm. Strategy is extremely important. You want to always make sure that you're like somebody's got an assassination set up so that you can blow through and just knock everybody down. But when you, when it works, which it does 95% of the time in co-op, it's just fucking brilliant. I loved it. Like, with the exception of just having to get together with somebody and not having the same schedule, the single player can fuck off. And on top of that, there are a series of, like, challenge level type things.
Challenges or something like that. I can't remember what it's called. But
Things that, and the only one I played is the infiltration, which I unlocked using the Uplay points. Mm-hmm. But that's essentially a run through of the co-op storyline levels, but with Terrorist Hunt instead of actually achieving story goals. Just X number of bad guys in the level. You have to kill them all without them sniffing you out at all. So I kind of feel like I have to poo-poo the single player a little bit, but fuck if it is not actually seriously worth your time and probably even your money for how good the co-op and some of the extra stuff is. And really, if it's the flavor of previous Splinter Cell games you're looking for, it's all in the extras. It's the last thing you want to do is actually play the story mode. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know none of you guys have any sense of what the previous games were, but the closest you're going to get in this is, you know, Archer and or Kestrel. So highly recommend it for the multiplayer alone. You can get it, don't even touch it, single player shit, and be well served. I liked their projection methodology. It worked good. You know, the titling and the displays and stuff.
The presentation's just...
It was good.
I love that.
It was really fun. It was never...
That and the interrogations are great.
It was never super overt. I really wanted the interrogations to be more. You know what I wanted them to be like? I wanted them to be like the Punisher.
Right, yeah. Yeah, those were
really great. I wanted them to go just a little bit further. But even in regards to the interrogations, man, like some of the best ones were in co-op. I could stick that dude's face on a stove. Like, that was brilliant. I didn't get to do that in a single-player game.
Oh, that's sad.
And you can tag-team him.
Yeah.
Because most of the interrogations are like, you get a guy and you beat him up, you know, and it's like, rah, 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 tell me the thing. And he's like, fuck you, I'll never tell you the thing. And then you smash him into some stuff. It's real fun. And then you talk some more, and you're like, now tell me the thing. And he's like, oh, but they'll kill me if I do. You know, and then there's the obvious, but I'll kill you if you don't. And then you smash him into something else. And in the co-op, you can do this, and then like you kind of let him go, and then your buddy can come over and do it. So you can sort of like take turns. it's good. It's absolutely good. I know it's not the first time they've done this, but I'm super impressed by how well the multiplayer.
First time they've done it this great. I mean,
absolutely killer. And it's very tightly coded. It's very well done. Like, the fact that
I can see your... I don't know. Was this even in Rainbow Six?
What?
That we could see everybody's marks? I don't think so.
The fact that we can share marks and, like, you know...
Like, if he tags two guys and says, you know, do you see the guy that I've got
if we've each got... Like, if we've each got a 5-7...
Yeah, yeah.
Then we've got tag 8. Four guys. We could, like, tag 8 guys and just...
But I can see the people he's tagged, and he can see the people I've
with
tagged.
With a little number that's it, like he'll see like
which
a 2 on it.
Makes sense, because you don't want to tag, I don't want to tag the same four people that he's got tagged. And then also the radar.
Yeah, they balanced the radar really well. This was a little frustrating. We complained a lot about Batman, about how you felt like you had to always be in detective mode, otherwise you were denying yourself a lot of information.
Yeah.
And the environment looked great, but it was just so much easier to operate with detective mode on all the time. Imagine a game designed for you to be in detective mode all the time and give you 3 different detective modes, like heat, EM, and IR. Or, well, IR is...
Sonic?
No, that's not how the previous one was. It was IR...
It was night vision. It was
heat vision. It was just low light, IR, and EM.
I thought there was a third.
Yeah, that's what it was. There was EM.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Infrared, heat, and then just the low light stuff. So it's kind of like pulling Predator shit. And that's how the first Splinter Cell was. You spent 90% of your time in one of those modes of vision, and that's kind of how a lot of stuff was designed. It was really, really very fun. This game doesn't do that. It totally takes that shit away from you. You don't even get the little headset thing until toward near the end of the game. And then it's fun. It's like a Sonic thing, which makes no sense why it was a goddamn goggles. Or whatever, but yeah, maybe it does. But allows you to mark through walls and kind of see shapes and objects and stuff, but it doesn't work while you're moving. The entire effect is completely disrupted while you're moving. So you can't just run around like that. So it's all about stop, pop your sonar, mark some targets, move a little bit. And whatever, fucking worked.
Yeah, it did.
Worked really, really well. I'm very hopeful that you'll get online and we can play some more of that.
Definitely. I want to wrap it up. I
cannot recommend it enough.
I want to wrap that up and the single player up this weekend, because I think next week is next week. I don't know what next week is.
Is next week a damn thing? I thought we were like in a dry wash until the 18th.
Until the 18th. That's right.
What was the 18th?
Everything. Too much goddamn shit.
Why do I think something comes out next week?
Super Street Fighter 4 comes out next week. That's just me, though.
Yeah, I'll look that up just real quick. Yeah, nothing. I got Dead to Rights Retribution. That's just me, but
The 18th. Well, the 18th is the big.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lost Planet 2 comes out the week before, but
yeah. Well, you and I agree the same thing. Like, I'm not risking.
Right.
I'm not risking that turnaround.
Yeah.
Yeah. To miss Red Dead or Alan Wake or.
Right. I'm gonna have to buy Alan Wake. For Dana.
Mm.
I don't know why, but she's got up. She, whatever.
Did she watch those first 11 minutes that were put online?
No. Okay. She didn't do that. She won't do that.
No.
Speaking of which, the little prequel for Alan Wake.
Is it the...
The episodes?
The episodes? Yeah. The live action stuff? No, I haven't seen the whole thing yet.
They're doing like live action... lead-in episodes, like weekly webisode type of deals that are a prequel to Alan Wake. That will the finale will be on the 17th.
Well, we're gonna see these then.
The first one doesn't go up until next week.
It's next week, yeah.
At that point, it's like supposedly exclusive to live, but yeah. Whatever, it's the internet, my friend. I'm sure you'll be able to find it. It was like a tiered release, like Live Gold, and then somewhere in the web. I can't remember how they were doing, but basically, it's gonna be weekly releases leading up to Wake. So
either way, I'll be able to see them.
No, absolutely, you will. That's cute. You know, I can get behind that. I like that sort of thing.
Next email from Daniel Phelps. It says, before I start my question, which is kind of different than my normal strain of inquiries, I should tell you I have a strong attachment to game soundtracks and remixes. And it was listening to some of that stuff, which I affectionately labeled Big Fucking Playlist 9000, that gave me this idea. When I hear certain pieces of music, I see an event happening in my mind. Even a particular remix of the Mario Brothers music makes me drop into my own little world, usually as Luigi for some odd reason, fighting Goombas and Troopas with Mario. It's that way with Metal Gear Music, Bioshock, Deus Ex, and so on. So I get the idea to start writing down the events I see. Sorry if I'm not being clear. This is very hard for me to describe. As I do this...
I drink a lot. I know it's perfectly fine. Don't you ever feel bad about like bringing in some weird brain shit on me, man.
As I do Always this, game. I see an overall story forming where random dude who plays games has an interesting mindset. Various things he might see or hear during the day lead him to pause for a bit and live in the video game world, much in the same way the music does myself. I thought about it, and I'd like to write a novel or something of the sort, but no idea how to make the story begin or end. Just a neat thought I had, wondering if, number one, you guys ever see these visions with any sort of music or whatever, and number two, if you have any suggestions or changes to the basic idea I'm fumbling to convey. If I ever put thought to paper, I'll send in a chapter or something. I get the feeling that you guys can be a lot more help than some places, since many of you are well read, I gather, Daniel. Yes, and I don't know about if I have any suggestions for it. I've never gone to the extent that you have with it, but I've had the same thing. I hear pieces of, basically for a time there, in the original Xbox days, because I would listen, I would go to see movies with you guys, or sometimes by myself, whatever the case, and I would listen to that soundtrack as it played. If anything ever struck me, it's like, I got to buy that, put that into my Xbox, and play it with Burnout.
I remember that.
But Burnout had a neat thing that it didn't carry over into the 360. And this is the 360's fault, I believe. I don't think it's Burnout's fault. When they had the custom soundtrack option on the original Xbox, Burnout had a neat little thing where whenever you used Boost, everything became louder. But your music really became louder, because it was like trying to get that whole tense and exciting moment and whatever else. And anytime you would wreck, music would go away, and it would just be that little slow motion, you know, bending of the metal in the car, twisting and that sort of thing. And then your music would come back in this nice little, you know, sucking motion or whatever. It did that on the original Xbox. And boy, I had so much music wrapped up in that thing. Just tons of soundtracks. The car chase scene from The Rock. Damn near anything from Pirates, the first movie. What else did I have in there? Pretty much anything Hans Zimmer had ever done. I put that in there. Face Off was in there. Broken Arrow was in there.
I'd come over and I'd be like, is this Pirates? No, it's The Rock. And then the next time I come
over, it's the same thing.
Like, is this Pirates? No, it's from Bad Boys or some shit. Like,
but it worked, and I loved it. And I could still do it with a 360, but it lacked the...
not as subtle.
It didn't have the polish that it had from the original from the original Xbox, where the music would kind of be in time with what you were doing. And boy, it was fun, because if you ever were just down and that music was pumping and you're trying to get the first, God, it just enhanced that game so much. And that's the visions that I would have when watching films like that. There was a time when I started recording my playthroughs of Burnout because I wanted to make a nice little trailer timed to music and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I have the visions all the time. What can I suggest to you about...
Keep having them.
Yeah, just keep doing it.
You need more.
Yeah. I still do it, man. I analyze film trailers with the way that they either convey what they do and then with the music that they use for it. That's sometimes, most of the time.
There was a time when I listened to a lot of game soundtracks. And I can remember listening to the Metal Gear Solid soundtrack. In particular, like the chase music, and I could see those fucking Genome soldiers pouring out of the, you know, from the bottom and the top of the stairs, that tower that you had to go.
Yeah.
Oh, God damn it. Yeah, it was always that.
Oh yeah.
And of course, the Tetris music always conjures blocks. But not as intense as maybe what you're talking about. But yeah, it definitely pulls up images in my head of the games I've been playing.
Oh, yeah, I have a ton of game soundtracks. Final Fantasy Silent Hill, man. You ever want some nightmare fuel, play some of that music. Especially,
I don't know that that's a particular Fantasia I want to be involved
in. No, it's not really. The man, when you need to get through final exams and you're like about to crash,
yeah,
it like goes like really soft, quiet track. All of a sudden you get like, you know, metal banging against metal going.
What's
going
to keep me awake? All right, memory of abject fear.
Being chased by, you know, flying dodo birds that are skinless and shit.
Stuff without faces.
Yeah.
I never really had visions of such. The only things I really did in terms of music is things that never fit. You know, like picture Sonic when it was good.
Yeah.
Anything slow in a Sonic game really wouldn't fit. Like if I'm running through a stage in 90 seconds, I don't want to hear no waltz. I don't need to hear that. I need something fast paced to keep you going, like you said, in a Burnout, something fast paced and
tense. Yeah, I mean, that whole thing, yeah, there was exactly. Never, God, I didn't put anything, take Burnout Paradise, for instance, right now. You can kind of customize the soundtrack that you want it to play, and I took out all the EA tracks, which is basically the licensed artists that they use.
Yeah.
But the guys at Criterion put every single soundtrack they had done since Burnout, which is the music that they created themselves. They put all of that into Paradise. And so I went through there and I kept all that stuff, and then had some of the tracks that I put in there as well. But so that's playing. It's all pumpy. It's all, you know, just nothing but stuff to get you going. Mm-hmm. Anytime you're parked in Paradise. And have you played Burnout Paradise?
No, I've seen it in action. I haven't played it, but I've seen it.
Anytime you're parked and don't do anything, your engine will shut off. The screen will go to black and white. And it'll just kind of pan slowly, and then classical music plays. Mm. Because it's just like, okay, you're not doing anything, and this is, you know, we'll just keep this in the background. But then you start your engine up, boom, you're back going. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's exactly right. I don't want to hear that. Well, I don't hear that trying to sweep around these curves, doing these jumps, and then getting wrecked like that. So
I think sometimes, though, for what it's worth, sometimes the... What's the right word? Sometimes the inconsistencies can be very beautiful.
Oh, they can, and you see them. You see them a lot in film.
I don't know if you remember, and you may not. I remember it so distinctly. I may have to YouTube it when we're done. One of the television commercials for GTA 3, when they were had all the different stations and all the different music. Yeah. And it was the opera station.
Yes, I remember that.
And there was like this really well orchestrated, like very automobile-centric stuff. It wasn't about a lot of the on-foot stuff, but it was all of this hyper-violent, mm-hmm. hyper-kinetic vehicle stuff going on, and there was like this piece of opera playing in the background, and it was a piece that...
I vaguely remember
it was that, a piece that would play on one of the radio stations, and I remember going, it struck me so much. And it was so beautiful in the way that it had been... Mm-hmm. layered and pieced together, that when I actually started playing the game, I would like, when that would come on the radio, I would go around and like try to do some of those things and like recreate. I was like, this is amazingly good. I like this. This is chocolate and peanut butter is what this
it
is.
It was always great listening to the classical station whenever you would hit a jump and it would do that slow down pan of you going over with great. The music with it. And I was like, yep, there's a great
moment. I would only do that in a mob car though.
Every time it fit. Which takes me back to Mafia 2 again. In my write up on how Mafia 2 plays, it's very much like the Godfather games are centered around Godfather. That's it. So it's got nothing. But Mafia 2 can pull from, you know, anything that is mob related outside of Godfather or within.
Right. Anything from the mythology.
Yeah. Exactly. So you're getting more Scorsese than you are Coppola. From your Mafia 2 style, or from Mafia 2, which is great because you can get your classical music, not really your classical, but your, I don't know, your 40s and 50s tunes, which are really kind of happy-go-lucky while you're bludgeoning some man to death, which I've kind of always liked. I like that. Right. Some people don't like that, but I kind of like that. I don't know why, it's just because of that.
Sometimes you need a little butcher beat.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Which, by the way, that's a fucking soundtrack that crawls right the fuck up in my cerebral cortex.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And won't let me go. Fallout 3.
Mm-hmm.
That shit just absolutely, as done with that game as I am. Like, if one of those songs comes up in my playlist, I am in the fucking wasteland again.
I can smell the fucking wasteland. You said you mentioned Butcher Pete. I remember going out to find part two to turn this radio over. You heard nothing yet. Well, there's part two. Let's go look for that right
now. I showed movies over at the theater that have songs from there.
Oh, really?
It's like, no, you're not supposed to be doing that.
I'm sorry.
And that song doesn't go with that.
It's supposed to be like dirt and grime and, you know, jumpsuits everywhere.
Yeah.
All right, last email here from SBB Tool. I did, I think. SPB Tool. Anyway, hello in-game chat masters. I know you are not huge fans of the gamer score. While I enjoy getting achievements and seeing what it was that caused it to pop, I'm not a fan of the arbitrary points. I have several friends on my list that are total points whores. I'm curious what you think about a service like TrueAchievement.com that re-rate the points for achievements based on other players having the achievement. Would a similar system incorporated into Xbox Live apply more validity to your gamer score? Or would it become annoying to have your score constantly changing? Please keep up the great work you guys do. I don't pay enough attention to my...
I know, dude. I know exactly what I would do. I've mentioned time and again, of course, like, they live popularized the achievement thing. I mean, we know that, that meta scoring of player data has been around for a minute, but they like really codified that kind of thing. What they didn't do is expand it and put it to any good use. They didn't do that at all. That kind of branding is already well at work in Warcraft. A community-driven thing that has not only achievements, which have been used for both good and ill. Like, you know, show me your achievement that you've done, you know, Obsidian Sanctum, or you're not coming to my pickup group. Well, okay, fine, you're trying to see that I've already done it so you know we won't be working too hard. But at the same time, what if I've done it but on a different character? Yeah. You're locking me out just because I haven't seen it on the sky. More to the point, if the Xbox Live community were a broader thing, the kind of thing I would absolutely expect to see in the next iteration of the Xbox world, instead of just this thing with arbitrary achievements and a bunch of names on a flat screen, but like actually having some kind of dynamic community, maybe not an MMO, but you, I think you get what I'm saying, then what you're going to wind up with is fucking gear score, which is... to some small degree, that's what that seems like. I could look at another guy in World of Warcraft and see, like, oh, okay, he's like wearing like these shoulders and this chest, and I can inspect him and see what's going on and see what the average item level of his gear is and all this stuff. It's really great. Or I can use a gear score add-on that automatically reweights the value of all of those pieces of gear and just outputs a single value. So that without even looking at you, without even giving a fuck what your name is, I can see, you know, oh, okay, 4K gear score. He's a noob. Fuck him. Right? It makes it very easy to discriminate at a glance. And even though things have been reweighted so that it's like, well, it's not just what, you know, his gear is, but like whether it's gemmed or enchanted properly, and that's a much more difficult system. It's good, and it's not that it isn't useful. It is useful, but people rely on it so heavily because it's so easy to use to just make snap judgments about whether somebody's worthy of respect or worth taking along your group, stuff like this. And I'm certainly not saying that's what would happen. All I know is that if you make it matter, then it's going to matter, and maybe not in the way you want it to. Mm-hmm. If you make it a tool, if you make it something useful, there's a really good chance it'll be used against you. Because we all know what kind of people exist on Live. And I'm just saying, you know, World of Warcraft's filled with more, like, poopy pants, little shitbag assholes than anywhere else in the world. And I avoid them. I play with people I know, and then I do my thing, and it's fine. I can still have fun in the game. But you give them the ability to discriminate against you based on some, you know, their own neurotic insecurities and some arbitrary system, and they'll do it. At the moment, I don't think it matters. Just because it doesn't matter, right? Yeah. Like, there's nothing, it doesn't matter, it has no weight. Or maybe it does. Maybe there's communities out there that care. And if they are, then I suppose we're already at that point, so... I do agree that I think that they should. That it would be a little more interesting if they were. I don't know. We all know that you can thousand point some shit that isn't even remotely difficult, and that there's a lot of things out there that are actually kind of difficult that are only worth, you know, a pittance. So I would like to see it become something more mature. I guess that's really all I can say. I would like to see that point system develop beyond what it is, even though that may not.
Yeah, I'll say I don't pay attention to the points. The most I use the achievements for is see, okay, this guy's playing the same game. Let's see where they are in the story.
Like, exactly.
And that's about it. Or like say, okay, let's see if he's done that special mission. It's like, oh yeah, so let me get some help on that from him.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet they polish the shit out of it for the next time around.
Yeah.
Cause at the moment it's not terribly useful. And it really could be. So personally, though, no, I don't really pay attention to them.
Yeah, before we go on, I don't know where we're going anyway, but there was a thread, or there was a post in our thread from the last episode that was relevant, and I think he said he probably wanted to put this in an email, but he didn't. Mug Beans wrote in and said, you know, glad to have you back, everything. There's one thing I need to get off my chest. Hopefully you guys will discuss it in the next podcast. That is the next XCOM game.
Yeah.
I have no...
You have no history.
I have no history with this. And he's like, what the fuck? It's going to be an FPS. Man, they took the nerd rate meter off the chart. Why, oh, why do they have to drive another great franchise down the drain? I'm fucking sucking on words today. Franchise down the drain. So I have no history with this, so I don't know.
Mine's really limited. I didn't have a love affair with it, so it's not going to matter much to me.
Yeah, that's about where I am. I only played the... last one in the squad-based games, which is Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I didn't play, UFO Defense and Terror from the Deep, I think, were the first two.
What are they?
I think so.
They're not FPSs. What are they?
They are, it's squad-based tactical game, where you, originally it was, you had, like, use ability points, like, move around and shoot and such, and that was kind of how it controlled the time, and then in Apocalypse they added in a real-time situation where everybody moved around certain speeds and such. Or you do your little time, little points-based system.
Yeah, it was,
Was it something like Command & Conquer or something like that?
Not...
So I'm
not,
trying to find a comparison.
There were a lot of things kind of like it. Kind of in a Jagged Alliance sort of way, or a Syndicate.
YouTube really helps in these situations.
It was a little bit Syndicate-y, I guess. I don't know. Here's what it boils down to.
Okay.
We just went through this with Fallout. I say just, but like the past few years have been this thing. Fallout was not at all like what Fallout 3 was. Fallout was not a first-person shooter with a VAT system and any of that. It was hard RPG, you know, hard, like, stat-driven RPG-type stuff and sort of pointy-clicky move-around type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the argument then was, what makes Fallout? How much of what is Fallout are we losing? And let's be honest, you are losing something because you're making an entirely new interface for the game. You're interacting with the world in a different way. How much of it is the awesome story, the awesome setting, or the awesome mechanic? So how much do you lose? And when you lose what you are losing, the mechanic, how well implemented is the replacement? Fallout had the benefit of having kind of a really almost endlessly brilliant world to play in. I think the problem with XCOM, if I read correctly from all of my friends, and I really wish Matt were here for this because Matt would have an awful lot to say about it. I'm sure he will catch us up when he gets back. XCOM really was about the gameplay. To an amazing extent. Yeah. It was about how it's played. And normally when someone would rage about they're taking this and turning it into an FPS, I would be like, just calm the fuck down. Like, whatever. It doesn't matter. I don't think I'm going to do that this time. I think I'm going to agree. I think that so much of what made XCOM what it was to so many people was how it was played. Was that it was... The actual mechanical, physical gameplay was really great. And that a lot of the other stuff was secondary or tertiary to the actual gameplay. So when you change the actual gameplay, what the fuck? Just because you're covering the same filler material doesn't make it an XCOM game. And that's where we are. And from what I can tell, you know, we had a shortcut with Fallout 3. Right? Because we knew Bethesda was making it, and it's like, oh, Oblivion with guns. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. You could decide for yourself how accurate that was, but the fact that we, simple-minded, lizard-brained gamers, had a shortcut to run to. We had a framework and a metaphor we could work with. Like, Oblivion with guns. Okay, fine. You know. Wah, but fine. In this case, I don't think it I don't think there's really anything comfortable to latch onto, you know. Just the realization that, oh, remember how much fun it was to do all the things you did? You're not going to do any of that shit. It's going to be a first-person shooter.
The gameplay is your bread and butter. You don't want to mess with that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of course, on the other hand, on the third hand, when the hell was the last time you played an XCOM game?
Yeah.
Long time ago.
I mean, if it's a question of no XCOM games or this thing, where are you? And I know that that's not entirely rhetorical because a lot of people will say, fuck it. No XCOM games. Leave them alone.
I almost think I bought the XCOM series on a Steam sale over the holiday.
Oh, really?
Just because it was like $2. You got every single one of them or something. Yeah. And I'm sure I picked it up. Just haven't done anything with it.
No, I think it would maybe have been better left alone or left until we could sort of fucking get over ourselves and go back to making these older. You know the problem is you can't make XCOM on a console unless you make it a first-person shooter. Yeah. Then you sure as hell can. So maybe that's your real culprit. That's the real black hat, isn't it?
I missed
it. It is if you go to RPS.
Yeah. I missed a tweet earlier. It didn't have the reply. I'd sent out a tweet earlier in the day saying, hey, we're going to record, send your tweets and emails. And SnakesMom93 wrote in, it was stuck in my brain. I couldn't figure out where to find it, but it was a tweet.
Nobody wants to talk about this.
I know.
Nobody in here is interested in this thing you're about to say.
Oh, okay. Well, then I won't say it. I'm just kidding. This is just a request. Can you talk about the new Doctor Who games and the current series? Jeremy, you're up.
Oh, I can get in on this too.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, the new series with the new Doctor.
Yeah.
I really like the new Doctor. I love Stephen Moffat as a writer. The games are apparently going to be canonical. So,
yeah, they're being produced by the BBC.
Yeah, right. And with the actual actors voicing their roles.
And furthermore,
Stephen Moffat's writing.
Yes.
They're free. Free as in beer. So
I think they released, what, a 10-second trailer of
pretty much? I scrolled past something about that. It's going to be about the Daleks.
Yeah, I know there were the Power Ranger Daleks in there. You know, each of them has their own color and all that.
I think of them more as like iMac Daleks, the iDaleks. Yes.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, man, I'm all over those when that comes out. Hopefully it'll be good.
They've got
all the right, you know.
Well,
all the right ideas outside of the actual gameplay. Hopefully they can get.
I was going to say, do we know anything about
who's making it?
Yeah,
I have
who's
no idea.
Developing.
Not a clue.
That tends to be sort of a critical element
in a
development of a video game.
It looks and sounds very, what was it, Telltale?
Studios? Yeah,
it's episodic, that sort of thing.
Seeing the few seconds you got in there, it looked kind of like Telltale where you kind of explore the world, but it looks like there's a little bit of, like, some stealth bit because it was like you saw Dalek, like, patrolling around and trying to avoid his cone of vision.
That's fine. I'm glad that they're doing it. I'm glad that it's free mixed with full and complete support of the people producing the series mixed with canonical story tie-in. Like, this is great. You could, the actual development aside, you couldn't ask for more from a licensed property.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it'll be short little whoosie-whatsits, but I think it's really terrific. I wish I wasn't like a million thousand years behind on Doctor Who. Otherwise, I'd have an opinion about
you're
the
only a season
stuff.
Behind.
I
can't be a season behind. I gotta be like a million years behind.
You're a season and a few specials because they took a year off.
Yeah. What was the last thing you saw?
The last memory I've got is a fucking Martha.
Okay.
No, the Titanic. That's the last thing I saw.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
With Kylie Minogue.
You have one season and four specials? No, three specials because one's two-parter.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You're not that far behind.
I don't know. It feels like a fucking age. I'm not even kidding.
Well, it took them a fucking age to
Dude, I haven't watched an episode in, like, literally years.
It's been about 2 years since
I've
seen one, so.
The other problem is, of course, this is one of those things where it's like, you're not watching that without me, are you? You're not going to watch that without me.
Oh,
we need to watch that. Let's watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what you should do? You should watch it up here after we
get you, no, 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 you don't understand.
Don't. Don't ever tell her.
Doesn't work. She'll
out. Then when she gets around to watching it,
doesn't really work out all that well, right? She'll pout, man.
You just can't win against that.
She'll
pout,
just fucking pout, and it's like, seriously, fuck you. You watch The Real Housewives of Where the Fuck Ever. Fuck off. This is your punishment.
But I'll say Doctor Who, pretty much the same thing. I love New Doctor, love the writing, I love where it's going, and I want to watch more of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Stop looking at that. Do your job.
I was trying to find if...
Too bad.
Who the developer was on that, so...
Oh. So you were at Game Trailers instead of, you know, Google?
Yeah, because I thought I'd find it faster. I figured I could go to Game Trailers, type Doctor Who, and then boom.
But you're new here, aren't you, on the internet?
Yeah, kind of.
New around these parts.
You need to find your way around the tubes, man.
Anyway, that's it. That's all we got there.
Yeah, because we totally just started an hour and 50 minutes ago.
Yeah, whatever.
So this is a much better way. It's much more interesting.
Oh, yeah, totally.
When they interact with us. I'm totally more interested in what they have to say than what I have to say. I don't know if anybody cares.
And they're much more interested in what you have to say.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, maybe not after I tell them this. You know what? Yeah, I fucking paid $25 for a sparkle horse.
I was wondering.
Not only did I pay $25 for a sparkle horse, I bought that shit before it was even announced. Like when somebody found the embedded link, and they're like, "Zong gets live."
He took out his money, like set it down and pushed it aside, and said, "That's it."
Yeah, I don't know if any of you guys even like.
I know what you're talking about, but I haven't seen anything about it.
I have no idea.
When patch 3.3 went live on World of Warcraft, as always. The guys out there at the wherever, like MMO Champ or something, data mined the shit out of the patch data on a private server.
That shit.
And just fucking suck everything out of it so they can see the changes. This is how we're always way the fuck ahead on some of the things. Well, one of the things they found was a new mount. And it looks like Algolon out of Ulduar. It's Sparkle Horse, man. It looks like you're riding a horse constellation thing. It's this ethereal horse, pegasus, winged thing that's a riding mount and a flying mount, and it sparkles and stars. My God, it's full of stars. And it looks like connected, it's constellation, whatever, it's a thing. And we saw it and we're like, it's probably going to be a drop from a whatever. And a week ago, I guess, one morning, like Blizzard, before they were opening it up for sale, they have their little virtual pet store.
Mm-hmm.
Where they sell little virtual in-game pets and just various other whatnots. And just, I don't buy those things. I don't have the little pets. And I have like one. I sort of have one character who's a mount whore. That's it. Every other character I don't give a fuck. But like I have one character that has mounts. So I'm like, whatever. I'll collect them. Anyway, it was revealed that this would be a purchasable mount. First time they've ever done that. Basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's whatever. I don't have fuck much I can charge for it, but, you know, whatever. Then they basically released, like, they made it known that, like, it was going to be saleable, but they didn't announce it. It was just kind of there on the page, and it was on the front page, then it was removed. Then somebody found that active link to the item page itself where you could buy it, and I was like, eh, okay. Because they announced, like, everything that it did. It was $25, real human world, $25. This mount will work on every character you ever create. Every character you create, have created, and ever will create.
You will automatically get
one in the mailbox. It will scale to every level of your writing skill. It is usable right away. It is a flying mount, and it is a ground mount, so it can be used as both. Now, mounts aren't that expensive. The rare ones are simply hard to get, but nothing's expensive. The skill is expensive. The mount itself is quite cheap. It's dirt cheap. But it was just everything. It was like this whatever, you know, it was this thing. I was like, man, that's crazy. Like, fuck yeah, I bought one, $25. And like, I was like, whatever. Like, it's, you know, A, it's like $25. And I mean, I don't, to begin with, I don't know where everybody, or you guys who listen, I don't know what your fiduciary state is. It's none of my business. Yeah, I don't have kids. You know, the girl and I, we each got our jobs and we got our things and we, you know, the house, we got our cars, take care of our stuff. Like, nothing weird, very non-complicated life. $25 is, I can spend on a lunch. Like, $25 is, you know, I know that, like, when you don't have a job, it sucks. A lot of my friends in my little guild can't do it because, like, they have a job and they have their whatever. But, like $25, like, it's not a thing. And I fully expect it. Like, I logged in to go get my horse, and I was like, where's everybody else with their horse, man? Like, it's crazy. And, like, it was the biggest fucking backlash to some horse shit I've ever seen in my fucking life. It was like, it was exactly the same argument as tchotchkes you can buy for your Xbox Live avatars, mm-hmm. only magnified by World of Warcraft, you know? Mm.
Which they made how much off of that thing, and how long?
$1 trillion.
Yeah, they made like $2 million in 24 hours.
And it never occurred to me, A, that it was a, basically the whole thing, it was just this amazing, ridiculous explosion of bullshit. Like, where millions of people who play an MMO are telling millions of other people, hundreds of thousands of other people, what an idiot you are for spending real money on virtual things. And I'm like, the only reason you're logged in to tell me this now is because you spend at least 15 real-world dollars every month on virtual things. What the fuck? It was exactly that same argument that we had however long ago about this other stuff.
Yeah.
About entire legions, literal millions of people not understanding the concept of value. People deciding that it had ruined the game and that the next logical step was that Blizzard was going to sell the best weapons in the game to everybody. Like, yeah, here's a completely cosmetic item that does absolutely nothing. I want to create a macro where whatever the fucking the hell that is, that song that plays when you're playing. Like when you're playing a Rainbow Unicorn Attack.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Like, I want that to play every single fucking time I launch my goddamn horse because it's awesome.
Fire Stormin' Hall.
It's brilliant. It is so fabulous that I can't help but laugh every time. Like, I, you know, and I don't, like, I throw it in, I have, like, a random mount macro that just, like, throws up a random mount every time I hit it. And, like, if that would play every time my star pony showed up.
And live in harmony.
Yeah,
harmony.
God, it was so brilliant. And, like, people would, like, just cuss you out to the point where you'd have to report them to a GM because you were on the horse. And it's like, you fucking idiot. Look, I just went to Steam and, like, here's all these games I could have bought for, like, $25 or whatever. So you're an idiot. And it's like, but I own 3/4 of the ones you just listed. So I already did that with my... this is not the only $25 I have, man. I didn't go to town with this $25 and come back with magic beans.
Came back with something better than beans.
Like, I can get another $25 by showing up to work tomorrow. Like, it's, I mean, again, I'm not saying that everybody has money to burn. I do. That's my life is designed so that I have money to burn. I don't have crazy expenses. I don't owe other people money. I like having my money and then burning it on things. I like drinking a lot. I'm not saying that that's how everybody spends it, and I don't want to indicate that, but the fervor that is generated by how other people spend $25 shocked the shit out of me, and I've long since been acclimated to the retardation that I have to put up with to deal with my chosen bullshit, completely unhealthy MMO addiction. But it's absolutely fascinating. And, like, every gaming blog everywhere picked it up and couldn't be bothered to actually, you know, like, deal with facts or anything, or at least understand it in the context of what it was. Clearly, they sell star ponies. The next thing you know, tier 12 for a $100 bill. Like, this was the leap of logic. And it just, maybe some of you guys had the same leap. Let me reassure you that that's not going to happen. And yes, maybe it's a little gross that they made a hojillion dollars off of you know, generated codes or something in the span of a day. I really don't give a shit. I will gladly like prance around in Dalaran on my sparkle horse.
I'd like to make $100,000,000 off just a couple lines of code.
Yeah, it's like the time in Street Fighter. Remember when those packs came out, the costume swaps?
Yeah.
Came in there. Why would you pay for something? I think you asked me the question. Why would you pay for something that was already in the game? Well, it's important to me. I wanted it, and I got it. So it was my money, my choice, and the same thing applies here. You wanted, you had $25, you had the option to get it. You wanted, you got
that's,
it.
That's
I didn't even did. Think about it. I was fuck, done. Motherfucking Star Pony. God damn it. I'm buying that.
Yeah, you know, have at it.
What did I do in my only relation would be what I did with City of Heroes. They released the, what the hell was it called? The DVD edition.
Uh-huh.
And I went and picked it up because it had the power slot thing in there.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I went, and it had some other things with it, but I already owned the game. What was the point?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but see, this is, I know that there's actually not just a funny, but a legitimate discussion here. Like, we move further and further away from this idea that if, I swear to God, if there was a slippery slope, which is a mythological beast, like, it really is.
Sparkly horse, maybe.
Yeah. If there was, and then they said, well, now we can, like, totally fucking game you for all this other shit. Okay. And I guess there's no surprise that this rational fear, like, spreading like wildfire, that this is what they're going to do. But, and mostly, like, I'm all for the destruction of any notion of sanctity in a game like this, which is really kind of where a lot of people are operating from, you know? It's like, I earned my blah, blah, blah. Man, no, you didn't. Shut up. Shut up. I know you did some stuff for your whatever mount. I get it. I don't care. My horse is full of stars. Kiss my asshole. But it's just the number of arguments. Like, I could never really get down to what it was about. Because you could kind of debunk each piece of thing that was creating rage. And really, when you got it out of the way, there was really just more rage underneath it. And it's just like, whatever, fuck it. You're just pissed off at the world. Like, I don't know. But whatever, I thought that shit was really funny. And it was like a big fucking deal for a minute.
Almost forgot. Kevin. So, gonna play this. Can you switch over to the...
No.
Okay, what? Fine.
What are we doing?
Switch over to, so I can see how loud this shows up.
Yo, you guys know who it is. It's Kevin, man. How you guys doing? I'm going through withdrawals, man. I need to hear you guys. What the hell? Anyway, Scott. I don't know if you got my message. Did you actually get a skateboard that is from Skate, dude? If you did, you know what you got to do with that thing. You know exactly what you got to do with that thing. I'm not even going to mention what you need to do with that thing. Anyway, I know you guys are going to talk about the new Splinter Cell, so have at it. I want to hear about that shit. Take her easy, and I'll talk to you later.
Did you get a skateboard? From Skate? What the fuck is he talking about?
At PAX, if you they set a high score every day for the Beat the Meat contest, which is the part of Skate where you intentionally
Why aren't we considered art again? Sorry.
I know. Where you intentionally throw yourself off the skateboard and like try to damage your body in as many ways as possible.
That's
fun. Yes, it's fun.
Yeah, not that it wouldn't be.
Yeah, so they would set a high score. So on, so if you got that score, you'd get a board, just the board. You wouldn't get the trucks, the wheels, everything else that goes onto the thing. Just the board. That's all you got. And a couple of us from. Actually, God, I think a lot of us won that thing. It was very easy. Once you figured it out, it was very easy to get the score they had set. And I got one, Kevin, I'm sorry. But there was somebody there after the whole thing was over with that wanted one, and I was trying to get rid of mine because I couldn't take it back on the plane with me. I couldn't put it back in my suitcase. And then
put it
down
your pant leg.
Yeah. They'll never know. I was wearing shorts. So it wouldn't have mattered. But anyway, I didn't take it back on the plane with me. I gave it to somebody else from COG. But if you want one, I don't know. Maybe I can find one for you. I'll try and see if I can get one. Maybe at E3 or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, I felt pretty bad after I got back and Kevin was like, "Hey, I see you got a skateboard." Forget that Kevin actually skates. I know he plays the game, but I actually forget that he actually skates.
No, he does. He totally skates.
Yeah. So, sorry about that, Kevin, but now you know what happened. So, there you go. Anyway, that should wrap it up, huh?
I reckon.
You reckon?
Yeah, I do.
You reckon, Mark?